Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, bringing you science fiction in this hour. Later on, from the program X-1, but first, Suspense, with a broadcast from late in their series run from May 27, 1962, called That Real Crazy Infinity.
What do we do now, man?
Oh, I don't know. Gotta dig up some loot somewhere. We still got our horns.
Yeah, but do we blow them or hock them?
We ain't gonna find a hock shop in this town.
Oh, man, this is a real drag.
Yeah. All I want now is to get back to New York. What we need is one fast gig that pays enough bread for traveling expenses.
Why don't we check with that tomato behind the counter and see what the scoop is around here?
Crazy. Hey, baby?
Yeah, what'll it be, Jen?
Two more coffees, please, huh?
You got them.
Hey, honey, what's the best way to pick up a fast buck in town here?
Make a fast grab.
This kid is another Lenny Bruce.
Oh, just a touch of humor, boys. Say, what kind of work can you do?
Well, we're musicians. We like to earn bus fare back to New York.
Well, ain't much call for musicians around here, except maybe for church socials now and then.
Wow.
Any other kind of work?
Well, there's strawberry picking over at Tanner's farm.
Yeah, no, thanks. By the way, when is the next bus to New York, huh?
Oh, never. Leastwise, not from here. You gotta go clear over to Centerville, about 60 miles.
Well, any chance of getting a lift with somebody?
Ain't likely this time of night. Well, maybe in the...
Pardon me, Jenny. I couldn't help overhearing these gents in their predicament. Maybe I can help.
This here's Charlie Olden. Runs the radio shop in town here. Got TV, too.
Oh, that must be a gas.
Yeah, pleased to meet you, Charlie. I'm Bud. This is Lou.
Likewise. Hi. Now, as I see it, you gents could use a couple of dollars and a place to sleep, right?
Right.
Well, I can supply you with both. If you'll do me a little favor in return.
Listen, Clyde, what's the little favor?
Some electronic equipment just came in from New York on special order, and I got to deliver it to a place just out of town. Now, if you boys...
Doggone it, Charlie. I knew you was leading up to that, and I won't let you do it. Save no mind here, Jim.
No, you just mind your dishes, Charlie.
I will not. You got no right tricking these here strangers.
I ain't tricking them. I'm willing to pay.
You mean you'll pay us to deliver this electronic equipment?
Yes. $10 between you, and I'll drive you halfway.
Why halfway?
Aha. Now you're asking, stranger. Go on, tell him why, Charlie. I dare you.
Oh, hush up, Kenny. You're worse than my mother-in-law.
All right. What's the gimmick?
No gimmick at all, gents.
Voices from the grave.
What are you talking about, baby?
Voices from the grave. If you do like Charlie says, you'll walk in the land of the dead.
You know this broad is starting to bug me?
Look, let's have a straight story here, huh?
All right, then don't listen to Jenny, now. She's like everybody around here. She's scared of nothing at all.
Seems like you're the one scared to live the stuff yourself.
Oh, I ain't no such thing. It's just that I... I just want to get home early tonight for a change.
Where do we deliver this equipment to?
Just outside of town. Norville Hagen's place.
Well, what's with this Hagen? Is he some kind of kook?
Oh, no. He's right friendly. He's just maybe, a little different.
About as different as Dracula.
Oh, now, Jenny, you know that's just a lot of silly talk. Do you gents want to make that $10 or not?
Well, how about it, Lou?
Well, we need some bread, man, but, I don't dig the Dracula bit.
Look, Lou, suppose this guy Hagen is a flip. There's going to be three of us and only one of him, right?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Look, we got nothing to lose, and we need the bread. Even if it's only 10 beans, I say we do it. Are you with me?
All right, man, but the first time this gig starts to look flaky, I am cooling it.
Good man, Lou. All right, Mr. Olin, you got a deal.
Oh, fine, boys, fine. Let's get started. It's getting late.
It's an out-of-the-way place.
Yeah, old Norville likes his privacy.
He likes bumpy roads, too.
Oh, Norville don't care. He never comes into town. He just sends down for food and electronic supplies about once a month. Here we are.
Here we are? Where?
All I see is the side of a cliff.
There's a wooden stairway with a handrail. Leads all the way up. Now, let's get the box out of the car.
Kind of dark here, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Now, Grab the other end of this box, Lou, and walk straight ahead. You'll come to a stairway.
Man, what's in here, Rock?
Here's the stairway. Now set it down.
All right, now what?
You fellas start up the stairs. I gotta get something from the car.
Okay, grab that end, Lou.
But how far up do we have to go, man?
We'll see.
Hey, what's he doing?
The money's in your coat pocket. So long, Jensen. Good luck.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey, you...
It happened again, man. We were blowing a chorus with no lead.
Oh, we'll never find our way back down there. Now, there's only one place to go. Grab the box, Lou, and let's start climbing.
More coffee, gentlemen?
No, thanks, Professor. Two's my limit.
And you, sir?
Everything is cool, man.
Oh, well, then I shall make some hot coffee for you.
No, man. I mean the call. Never mind.
Very well. Well, I'd like to thank you again for bringing my electronic supplies, and I hope you'll be my guests overnight.
I don't know, man.
Yeah, we'd appreciate it. We don't have a car.
Oh, I assume Mr. Olin drove you here?
Uh-huh. Good old Charlie.
Yeah.
Well, you don't know how happy I am to get this equipment. I must replace some tubes in my Infiniphone. It hasn't been working for several days, and I've missed my classical concerts.
You dig classical music?
Oh, yes. I love the old masters. I think of them as dear friends.
I studied a little classical piano when I was a kid. I don't remember much past the Happy Farmer, though.
Oh, yes. Well, then, I must repair the Infiniphone immediately and let you both enjoy some of the great masterworks.
Oh, yeah, that'll be a gasser.
Do you have many records, Professor?
Oh, no. No, none at all. With the Infiniphone, I don't need records.
I see. It's a radio.
No, not exactly. It's my own invention.
Oh.
Let me explain it to you.
Mm-hmm.
All the sound in our world gradually becomes inaudible and trails off into infinity. I've simply created a machine for tuning in to infinity.
Uh-huh.
Yes. This way I can hear great masterworks in their original form, exactly as they were played centuries ago. Do you understand?
Man, I lost you back there when you were going to eat some more coffee.
Yeah, I think I understand, Professor. You, just tune into infinity and pick up sounds of the past, right?
Yes, that's it, exactly.
Well, that must be an interesting hobby.
Oh, it's more than that. You see, the classics are my life. As a child, I wanted to be a great musician, but, well, I'm a scientist instead.
Well, that's how the chorus goes.
Yes. I confess I don't understand much about life in our modern society. Out there in the world, I mean, I never seem to do or say the right things. I was considered rather odd.
Well, the world out there is pretty simple, Professor. It's just one big scramble for bread.
Bread?
Yeah, man, like, you know, loot, money.
Oh, yes, I guess that is important.
Yeah, I guess it is, like I guess we have to breathe.
It's the most unpleasant part of life for me, or was. I really don't care anymore. I may soon become part of the great classical past I love so well.
What do you mean, Professor?
I mean, well, all in good time. And now, would you like to see and hear the Infiniphone?
Oh, sure, Professor.
Good. Well, follow me, gentlemen.
We're not going with him, are we?
That guy is flipped. He's flaky. Well, let's go along with the gag. Maybe we can hype him out of something that's worth selling.
Yeah, but what do we want to hype a poor old guy like that for?
We're broke is why. Besides, if we play our...
He's coming, gentlemen.
Yes, sir. We wouldn't miss this for the world.
My plugging the patch cord into the side panel terminal and turning the selector dial, we can choose any past century or era we wish. Well, go ahead, gentlemen. Try it.
Oh, that's okay, man. I'm a believer.
He said try it. Now go ahead and try it.
Okay, okay.
I've set it for about 46 B.C. Now, tune it in.
Et conscriptus populus mandatus est mihi. Mihi caesaris duc, caesaris rex.
Yes, what was that, man?
I'm afraid it's Julius Caesar again. He's always making speeches.
You mean that was the actual voice of Julius Caesar?
Oh, yes, yes. I recognize him immediately.
Oh, yeah, all right. I'll bite. What's the gimmick?
But there is no gimmick. That's how the Infiniphone works. Well, it's really not so amazing, gentlemen. Why, my new invention, the Infinite Transitor, can actually... well, that can wait. Perhaps if I tune in a later period on the Infiniphone...
That sounds familiar.
I should get something worthwhile.
Don't. That's Berrigan. I know that sound anywhere.
Yeah, that's funny. But I never heard this record before.
Oh, that's no record. That's Berrigan himself.
Oh, what a crazy chorus. He's blowing his heart out. Prop, can we record this?
Why, yes, but I don't see why
we gotta record it.
It's simple enough. Press that button on the side of the panel.
Yeah, that's
it. Yes. It starts a tape recorder in the next room. I'll make sure the machine starts.
Dad, what are you doing this for?
Don't you get it? This will be the greatest discovery in the history of jazz. We'll be able to name our price with any record company in the country. And we'll never run out of material. Lou, we're rich.
Yeah, but what about the professor?
He'll never know the difference.
Yeah, but what if he digs what we're doing? We'll blow the whole bit, man.
Then we'll cut him in.
The tape machine is working perfectly.
Crazy.
Now, I hope you gentlemen would excuse me. I must get back to work on my Infinite Transitor.
Sure, you go right ahead, Professor. Lou, stop worrying. This is it. From here on in, we swing, man. No more crummy club dates, no lousy one-nighters. We're rich, man. We're rich. Hey, Lou, watch the volume of the tape machine. The needle's kicking way over.
Oh, man. Listen to that man, Lou.
Yeah, Lou, will you pay attention?
Oh, Lou. Oh, listen to that.
Watch the needle on that machine, Lou. Lou, will you take off those headphones and just watch the needle, huh?
Hmm? Oh, sorry, bud. Oh, but, man, dig that phrase.
Oh, go, man. Go.
You're going to go right out that window. You loused up 2 recordings this week. Come on, Lou, get with it.
Another pleasant dinner, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And now we pour the tea. Lou?
Oh, thank you.
And Bud?
Yes, well, thanks.
And myself.
Thank you.
Now... my pipe. Ah. You know, gentlemen, it's been some time since I really enjoyed my pipe this way. I must say it's been pleasant having you with me these past few weeks.
Well, we're glad we came.
I'd almost forgotten what it was like to have people around. You know, my neighbors aren't very neighborly. Perhaps that's just as well. They'd probably think me strange. In any case, I won't be around much longer.
You don't mean you're leaving here, Professor?
Yes, I do, Bud.
Yeah, well, what about the Infiniphone?
I don't know. I'll have no need for it, but I'm not sure I should leave it behind. It might do more harm than good. No, I haven't decided yet.
Professor, think of the pleasure you could give the world.
Well, If it can give the world as much pleasure as it seems to have given you and Lou, I might be inclined to leave it here. Lou especially seems entranced by the music he's been listening to and recording. Hey, Lou?
Yeah, Lou, you listening?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, sure.
You seem to have found something you like.
Something I like? Man, I'm stoned. I never heard such wailing in my life. Bunny and the bird, Prez and the rest, I would give up the best gig in the world just to sit in with those cats. For kicks. No bread, man. Just kicks.
Yeah, and that, Professor, is why I'm the one who has to worry about the bread. My boy Lou here is just living for kicks.
You're not a dreamer, Bud, and Lou is.
Well, dreamers aren't doers. And doers are the cats who get things done.
Yes, of course. But every now and then, one of us dreamers gets things done, too. Well, if you'll excuse me, gentlemen, I'll get back to my work inside.
Mm-hmm. You hear what he said?
Yeah, he's leaving.
Yeah, well, you know what happens if he does. We're out of business, especially if he takes the Infinophone with him. And we better get a lot of taping done and soon.
Yeah. You know what? There's something way out about the way he talks about leaving.
What do you mean?
I don't know. It's like he's happy. Like the way Prez used to look when he was blowing a great chorus, you know?
Yeah. Well, tomorrow I'm blowing a great chorus right out of here, and you're going to stay and make tapes all day.
Where are you going?
I'm going in and see Max Wesson at Flip Records, and I'm taking a small sample of our music with me.
To what for?
Well, I'm going to offer him exclusive rights to a recently discovered collection of recordings by the late and legendary figures of jazz. A collection that's out of this world.
Well, Max?
It's out of this world. It's out of this world. All right. What's the gimmick?
Well, there's no gimmick, Max. It's legit. This is for real. This music. That's the McCoy.
Yeah, I know that. Well, how did you get it?
All right, I'll admit it. It was dumb luck. I found the recordings in some tank town and bought them for peanuts.
That figures, I guess. All right, what's the deal?
$25,000 plus 25% of gross sales and a spot on your A&R staff for me and my partner.
That is highway robbery.
Is it a deal?
Well, okay. But you gotta bring me enough of this stuff to make it worth my while.
Don't worry, Max. My partner's taking care of that right now. Okay, Lou, put down your axe for a minute, will you? I want to talk. Yeah, Lou, do you hear me? What's wrong with you?
Man, I just made it. I almost goofed, but I just made it.
Made what? What are you talking about?
Well, you know, I almost started looking forward to recording that stuff and selling it.
What do you mean, almost? It's all set. We're rich, and we got steady jobs besides.
But without me, man, without me.
What are you, nuts? What's wrong?
I was listening to some jazz on the Infinophone. This cat is, he's blown his heart out, see? And I figured, well, there's no kicks in selling somebody else's jazz. I want something of my own.
You'll have something of your own, a big fat bank account.
Oh, anybody can have that. But not everybody can blow a chorus with Prez or Bunny.
Hey, Lou, baby, what are you, chewed up or something? Clyde, where's the tape you made today, huh?
I'm not sure I made one.
You what?
I started the tape, and then I heard those cats just swinging, and I picked up my horn and joined in. I guess the tape is still running.
Oh, no. You gotta be kidding.
Pardon me, gentlemen, I have come to say goodbye.
Goodbye?
Yes, Lou. Everything is ready now.
Where are you going, Professor?
To become part of the great classical past I love so well.
I don't dig you, sir.
I've completed my infinitransitor. In a few minutes, I shall be transported back into the past.
Are you kidding?
I think not, Bud. I hope not. I'm counting on it, so...
Oh, boy.
Well, gentlemen, goodbye. And thank you once again for your kindness. I shall never forget you.
Professor Hagen...
Yes, Lou?
Just how far back do you expect to go?
Lou, are you nuts?
Well, as far back as I wish, I suppose. Why?
Well, I... What I mean is...
Could you drop me off in the 30s?
Has everybody flipped around here?
Well, we could certainly try, Lou.
Crazy. I wait till I pack my axe.
Lou, this is ridiculous.
Maybe, man, but I got to find out.
Bud,
this is so long. I'm going to kind of miss you. We've been pals a long time, and you've always been on the level with me, and, so long.
Yeah, sure, Lou. Well, I'll see you in 10 minutes when you come back, huh?
Goodbye, Bud, and good luck.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Later, man, later.
Bud, I hope you find something you really dig, and when you do, man, play it cool. So long, pal.
Oy, doesn't this beat everything? The two of them are flipped. I don't know who's nuttier, the professor or Lou. Oh, man, I hope he got something on that tape. Yeah, give him a few minutes out there, and then I... gave it quite a play. They said, mad professor and musician die in explosion. I woke up here in the hospital. There was nothing left of the professor's place. Not a trace of the professor or Lou. It's a funny thing, though. Lou did make that tape before he left. He taped his own solos. And here's the guess. All the jazz critics claim it's the greatest stuff they ever heard. Yeah, I'm going to make a bundle of loot on Lou's recording. Somehow I just don't care. It doesn't seem important. All I can think about is poor old Lou. Well, I hope he's having a ball out there in that real crazy infinity.
You've been listening to That Real Crazy Infinity, starring Jack Grimes and Richard Holland, and written especially for Suspense by Dick W. Dowling. Is produced and directed by Bruno Zerato Jr. Music supervision by Ethel Huber. Sound patterns by Joseph Cabibbo. Heard in tonight's story were Cort Benson as Professor Norval Hagen, Bob Dryden as Charlie Olin, Athena Lord as Jenny, Robert Reddick as Max Wesson, and Guy Rep as the voice of Julius Caesar. This is Stuart Metz speaking. Listen again next week when we return with Stand In for Murder, written by Gladys F. Gallant. Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Suspense, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 27, 1962 on CBS. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now the first of three contributions that author Theodore Sturgeon made to X-1. This story, The Saucer of Loneliness, was heard on January 9, 1957 and would be used again later in that year.
25th of June, 1962. I was down on the beach. What is it, kid?
You seen a cop around any place?
On this beach?
I found his pile of clothes down near the rocks. The lady's dressing her shoes.
Well, did you see anybody? A girl?
Well, I think so, but she was running along the sand in the moonlight. I yelled to her, but she just kept running, and then I found these.
Look, kid, you go try to find a cop someplace. I'll see if I can find the girl.
Okay.
thought to myself, she's dead. I'll never find her now in this white flood of moonlight with the surf seething in over the pale sand. I ran and ran until my knees buckled and went down in the swirl of it, the sea on my lips, with the taste of tears, and the whole white night shouted and wept. And then I saw her, waist deep, walking into the surf.
Stop. Stop it. Come back. Come on, come out.
Let go. Let me go.
Don't do it. Please don't.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
I'm going to have to hit you. Forgive me.
I hit her in the neck with the edge of my hand, and she slumped. I brought her ashore and carried her to where a dune was between us and the water. Then I rubbed her wrists. She had a pale, beautiful face with ancient, bottomless blue eyes. She opened them and looked at me after a moment. It's all right. Here, put my coat over you.
Why couldn't you leave me alone?
I couldn't.
Why?
Because it's important to me.
I suppose you want to know why I did it.
If I told you I understand, would you believe me?
How could you understand?
Maybe I know what it means to be lonely.
That.
That's it, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm so terribly tired.
Put your head against my arm and just stay. Don't be afraid. I've been looking for you for a long time.
Looking for me?
All my life.
How did you know? I don't believe you.
It's true. I found your message.
Oh?
So you see, there's nothing to be afraid of. Not anymore. Just rest. The moonlight is terribly white.
Yes. I'd like to rest for a while.
She didn't remember it, of course. But I was one of the reporters who had covered the story when it first happened, 5 years ago. I'll never forget that day. I was working the police blotter. It was a quiet summer afternoon when they brought her in. Two big cops in blue uniforms.
Come on now, girlie, come on.
Let me go. I haven't done anything.
Take it easy now.
What's the trouble, Connolly?
Disturbing the peace, Sergeant.
Is this that Central Park call?
Hey, this is it.
I thought you radioed that there was a near riot up there.
Oh, you should have seen the place.
All right, give me the report.
Well, me and Bennett got up there. And there was a mob of people all surrounding this girl, see? So, we bust through, and there in the middle of maybe 600 people, she's lying there, sort of in a faint. I asked a couple of people what the difficulty was, and they tell me it's the flying saucer.
The what?
The flying saucer.
What flying saucer?
Let me finish, Sergeant. What flying saucer, I ask. And then they says that this girl was standing on the green, and suddenly the saucer comes down and starts whirling over her head like a halo.
What is this, miss? A gag?
It happened.
It did, eh? Well, now suppose you tell me your version.
I was standing in the park and I looked up and there it was.
Describe it.
It was beautiful. It was golden with a dusty finish like an unripe Concord grape. Made a faint sound, a chord of two tones. It circled over my head like some great round hummingbird.
Go on.
Well, other people must have seen it because they were all looking at me and pointing. I saw one man cross himself. And then he came down and touched me and spoke to me.
This flying saucer spoke to you?
Yes.
And, just what did it say to you? I said, what did it say?
I can't tell you.
A secret, huh?
Yes.
I see. Connolly, this girl is for Bellevue.
Well, Sergeant, the plain fact is that it happened just like that. And 10 witnesses all agree it did.
Are you trying to tell me that there was such a thing as this whirring hummingbird of a saucer?
Oh, there was that, Sergeant.
And just how do you know, Connolly?
Well, we've got the thing out in the squad car.
You what?
Bennett's bringing it in right now, see? About 36 inches across it is. And covered with strange marks.
Great, Mother. Did you call the bomb squad?
I didn't think of it.
Well, think of it, man. This may be some kind of atomic weapon.
I'll turn it over to ballistics.
Never mind about ballistics. Call the FBI and tell them we've got this thing.
Yes, sir. What about the girl?
We'll book her on disturbing the peace. I've got a feeling the government men may want a word with her.
Sergeant.
What is it, Benitez?
I'd like to do a story on this for my paper. Could I have a look at the saucer?
We'd better clear it first.
Well, could I talk to the girl?
After she's been booked.
Connolly, is the crowd still up at the park?
Very likely.
Well, I'll run up there and get some eyewitnesses. Then I'd like to come back and talk to the girl.
Up at the park, they were still buzzing about it. Some said she was a communist agitator. Some said it was a flying saucer from Mars and she had stepped out of it. Others said she was a saint and it was her halo. I took some notes, phoned the paper, and went back downtown to talk to her. But there were a couple of agents with her, and they wouldn't let me in.
Now then, miss, you told the sergeant this saucer spoke to you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did it speak to you in English?
I don't know.
You did understand it, though?
Yes.
Do you speak any other languages?
No.
Tell me, what message did you receive from this instrument?
Wasn't anything, really.
Suppose you tell me.
I'd rather not.
Miss, let me be very frank. I'm not a policeman. I'm a security agent. That means that I deal with problems that affect the security of our country. Do you understand?
Yes.
Now, we've examined this flying saucer enough to know that it is not of American manufacture. It also possesses an extremely high radioactive count. Now, that means that it was made in an area where radioactive materials are in great abundance, such as an area where atom bombs are made. That's why we want to know the message you received from the saucer.
There was no message.
You just made it up?
Yes.
I'm afraid you're lying. Suppose we have some soldiers bring the saucer in here and hold it over your head. Would you object?
I don't care what you do.
All right, boys, bring it in. Now, when I tell the men to hold it over your head, you try to recall what it said.
I don't know what it said.
Lift it up, boys. Hold it right over her head. It's talking to you now, isn't it?
Yes.
What is it saying? What did it say? All right, boys, crate it up and send it down to the National Research Laboratory.
Right. What about the girl, sir?
We'll get nothing out of her. I don't believe she really knows what that humming noise is. Better have a psychiatrist examine her.
Yes, sir.
Took her to the city hospital, and she had a room to herself. Whenever the door opened, she could see the policeman outside. The door opened quite often. There were a lot of important people, some in army uniforms, who came up from Washington just to see her and talk to her. Apparently, they had analyzed the flying saucer and discovered something that made this girl about the most important person in the country. I used to stand outside, and I could identify the heads of certain security agencies, but nobody would answer the questions that the reporters shot at them.
Sir, excuse me?
Yes?
I'm Jason Benayades from the Trib. I've been assigned to this flying saucer story as chief of the security...
I'm sorry, I have no comment.
Can you tell me how long the girl will be held?
That's a matter for the civil authorities.
Well, have the psychiatrist...
Excuse me, Mr. Benayades. My car's waiting.
A few days later, she was released from the hospital and returned to the court to be tried on the disorderly conduct charge. They found her guilty and fined her $15 and turned her loose. When she walked out of the courtroom, she was handed a subpoena to appear before a congressional committee in private session. She answered all their questions except one. My paper sent me over to cover the hearings.
Now, young lady, I want to remind you that I'm a senator of the United States and empowered by the people of this country to ask questions relating to matters of security. You understand?
Yes.
Your name is Janet Boyce. Mr. Nunn.
I told you that.
Now, at an earlier session, you testified that as a young girl, you were a member of a certain organization in your neighborhood. Would you name it?
The Rinky Dinks.
Who comprised the Rinky Dinks, Miss Boyce?
It was just a bunch of girls who got together to play field hockey and listen to recordings.
Any particular recordings?
Mostly Eddie Fisher.
I see. Now, this flying saucer, you said it talked to you. You did say that, didn't you?
Yes.
And then you denied it?
Yes.
Why?
Because I was tired of answering questions.
Young woman, let me put something to you squarely. Oh, by the way, I think if there are members of the press here, I can divulge a rather spectacular piece of information to you. This flying saucer has been thoroughly examined and analyzed, and I wish to inform the people of this great nation that it definitely, I repeat, it definitely did not originate on this planet. Now then, Miss Boyce, consider that it is possible that our Earth might be attacked from outer space by beings much stronger and cleverer than we are. And consider that perhaps you have the key to our defense against those beings. Don't you owe it to the world?
I don't think I owe anything to anybody.
Even if the Earth was not attacked, just think what an advantage it would give this country over its enemies. Young woman, I ask you, what did that flying saucer say to you? Do you know that what you're doing is tantamount to working for the enemies of your country? I will give you one more chance. What was the message?
It was personal.
Gentlemen, I move that Miss Janet Boyce be cited for contempt.
The furor was fantastic. The chief of security blasted the senator for divulging secret information about the origin of the flying saucer, and the senator said the people had a right to know, and besides, he was just guessing anyway, and happened to guess right. Meanwhile, the press printed the girl's picture all over the front page and ran banner headlines such as, Girl refuses to betray Martian secrets. Flying saucer girl won't talk, cited for contempt. The contempt trial was equally spectacular. She didn't plead any amendment or anything. She just said the saucer was talking to her and it was nobody else's business. She was convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Benaiades. Yes, Chief. For the Sunday supplement? What, do you think there's anything in it? Okay, whatever you say. Mike, get me everything you can on that flying saucer girl, will you? Yeah, the one that was sent to jail about 4 years ago. See if you can find out what she's doing now. She was released about 6 months ago, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah, the boss wants a feature for the Sunday supplement. Okay. I found out she had gotten a job cleaning at night in offices and stores down near the beachfront. There weren't many to clean, but that meant there weren't many people to remember her face from the newspapers. I tracked her down and caught up with her in a one-armed coffee joint about 4 a.m. Excuse me, miss. Do you mind if I sit here?
No.
Nice night, isn't it? Moonlight and everything.
Which are you? Security, newspapers, or just somebody out for a good time?
You're pretty bitter, aren't you?
Shouldn't I be?
Yeah, I guess you should. My name is Jason Benaiades. I'm with the newspaper.
It's been nice meeting you. I have to go now.
Just a minute.
Please.
I can't blame you.
How did you find me?
One of the leg men located your mother. I talked to her earlier tonight.
Oh. How is she?
Still hitting the bottle. The way she knew where you were, you sent her some flowers on her birthday, remember?
Yes. She wouldn't talk to me. Said she didn't want a daughter who was a jailbird.
Tell me how it's been.
So you can write about it?
I promise you I won't write anything you don't want me to write.
Okay. You want to know how it's been? Right after I got out of jail, I met a man at a restaurant. Nice man. He asked me for a date. I spent every cent I had on a red handbag to go with my red shoes. They weren't the same shade, but anyway, they were both red. And I was very excited about the date. We went to a movie. Afterward, he didn't even try to kiss me or anything. He just wanted to know what the flying saucer had told me. Didn't say anything. I just went home and cried all night.
And that was it?
No. I had another date. I get pretty lonely. This time, they arrested the man I was with. He was a Russian agent. On Christmas Eve, four men called me up and sang me a song. Would you like to hear the words?
No, it doesn't matter.
They go, the flying saucer came down one day and taught her a brand new way to play. And what it was, she will not say. But she takes me out of this world.
I'm sorry.
Now, will you go away and leave me alone?
Yes.
You're going to ask me the big question.
No.
Everybody does.
No, well, not me.
You will, sooner or later.
Maybe. Look, can I take you home?
No.
Can I see you again?
I...
Please.
I don't know. I'm afraid to let myself like anyone.
Trust me, will you?
I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'll wait here for you tomorrow night.
All right.
The next night, I went back to the coffee joint to wait for her. I knew she got through about 4 a.m. I got there about 15 minutes early.
Mr. Benitez?
Yes. Say... You're the chief of the security section, aren't you?
You have a good memory. You mind if I sit down?
Well, I'm expecting someone.
Yes, I know.
Oh, I see.
I'd like to talk to you.
Go ahead.
You probably know that we've been trying to gain the confidence of this girl for some years now.
Yes.
And, apparently you've succeeded where we've failed.
Well, not really.
In any event, you seem to be making some progress.
She may not even show up.
I think she will. Now, I'm going to ask you to help us.
Help? In what way can I help?
We have reason to believe that this girl is a courier for some alien power.
On what do you base that?
Well, there was the incident of the saucer, of course. We've definitely established that it came from some other planet. And recently, she's been throwing messages inside bottles into the ocean.
Well, what sort of messages?
They're always the same. Now, I have one right here. You're welcome to read it and see if it makes any sense. We've had every decoding expert in the service trying to break it. But we can't seem to find the key.
I see.
Now, she's throwing literally hundreds of these messages in bottles into the sea. We've got many of them, but not all, naturally. Now, what we're most interested in is locating the contact.
Naturally.
And that's where you fit in. We'd like you to gain this girl's confidence even further. Try to find out just what these messages mean, and beyond that, what the saucer said to her. You'll be doing us a favor and your country a great service.
You're certain this is some subversive activity on her part.
How else can you explain the fact that she won't tell us her secret?
Maybe because it's hers. And everybody has a right to have something of his own.
Are you, trying to tell me that you won't cooperate?
I didn't say that.
I'd like to remind you, Mr. Benitez, that you have a duty to us.
I know that. I also have a duty to myself. And to God. Now, if you'll excuse me. I folded the bottle message and put it in my pocket. I waited for her to show up. The minutes went by, and the hours, and I knew she wasn't coming. Or she had come and seen me with the chief and changed her mind. That's when I left the cafe and walked down to the beach. That's when I dragged her out of the surf before she could follow one of her bottles into the water. How do you feel now? Are you cold?
Why should you care?
I do.
Is that why you were sitting with the security chief in the cafe?
I didn't arrange that meeting. He asked me to spy on you.
I suppose he told you about the bottle.
Yes.
Wonder how much of the taxpayers' money they spent gathering it up. I think they'd get tired of it. All the writing in the bottles is the same.
Maybe you could have saved a lot of trouble.
Do you think so? All of them. Judges, jailers, jukeboxes, people. Do you really think it would have saved me a minute's trouble if I told them the whole truth at the very beginning?
Wouldn't it?
No. They wouldn't have believed me. What they wanted was a new weapon. Some super scientific super science from some alien super race. Science. That's all they think of.
Yeah. Pretty important.
Would it ever have occurred to them that this super race from another planet might have super feelings? Or super longings? Super loneliness? No. All they think about is weapons. Isn't it time you asked me what the saucer said?
No.
They all ask me.
I don't have to ask you. I know.
You know?
Let me read it to you. There is in certain living souls a quality of loneliness unspeakable. So great it must be shared as company is shared by lesser beings. Such a loneliness is mine. So know by this that in immensity there is one lonelier than you.
How did you know?
It's the message you put in the bottles. The same message that some lonely, strange being in some other world put into a bottle, only his bottle was a flying saucer and sent across space to you.
You knew.
I'm lonely too. Look at me. I've never had the love of a woman. They think I'm pretty ugly.
You're not ugly.
No. I don't feel ugly right now.
Say it again. The message from the soul.
Know by this that in immensity there is one lonelier than you.
I wonder if whoever first wrote it has found someone.
I think perhaps he has. She looked at me and said nothing. But it was as if a light came from her. More light than even the practiced moon could cast. Among the many things it meant was the fact that even to loneliness there is an end for those who are lonely enough, long enough.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features I Am a Nucleus by Stephen Barr, the story of a man who felt he was hexed because his comfortably untidy world had suddenly turned into a monstrosity of order. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Saucer of Loneliness, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Theodore Sturgeon and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Elaine Rost as Janet, Nat Poland as Jason, William Keane as the sergeant, Jock McGregor as the cop, Mandel Kramer as the chief, and Wendell Holmes as the senator. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1 on Tuned 2 yesterday from January 9th, 1957 on NBC. And that brings the curtain down on this hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.